This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with Town Administrator Jamie Hallett. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talk about election processing, the stormwater map with the new impervious area defined, budget subcommittee meeting coming up Wednesday before the town council meeting also scheduled for Wednesday. Reopening, the governor has just extended the restaurant outdoor dining extension. Beaver Street is now accepting credit card payments on site as opposed to just virtual and using the receipts. And there's good stuff on Franklin in the news. The police appeared on WBZ TV and students appeared on WBUR radio. Those links are in the show notes as well. The recording runs about 49 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Jamie. So this is Steve Sherlock for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, anywhere on the internet, in 102.9 on the local Franklin area dial, here for another Talk Franklin session with our town administrator, Jamie Hallett. Jamie, happy Friday.
EDIF, Steve. Absolutely. Yes. How are you?
Surviving the life, you know, a day at a time as we started talking. It's a challenge all the time, some bigger challenges than others, but, you know, you just make a decision and you go on.
That's right. And you know, great Chief McLaughlin down at the fire department started kind of a new annual tradition, as many as we know, but right. You know, down at the fire station this morning for the 9/11 tribute. So
it was
great, you know, just a short memorial. You know, it's the least we can do, Franklin, to have our public safety officers down there and the administration staff and a few others to certainly do our part as mm-hmm. part of the collective country.
Yes. Socially, you know, distance, of course.
At a time like today, you know, obviously we all remember where we were.
Intimately. Intimately. That memory comes back just not on 9/11. Absolutely. Yeah.
Comes back not just on 9/11, certainly the days after. And so it was nice to be down there with our paramedics and firefighters and public safety police officers and some other folks. That was a nice, you know, as sad as it is, obviously, to remember the moment, you know, there is a certain uplift that you get by being together. And it's great to be with everybody this morning. Yeah. And I thank you know, Chief McLaughlin and Chief Lynch for, you know, putting that together and just posting that, you know. It's nice to do, you know, 20 minutes even. It's just, you know, it's just nice to do something. So,
yeah, that's as we've talked here before, you know, social distancing certainly is important for our health. But the social aspects of that, wherever we can do that, clearly to your point and based on this morning, that's important. We need to keep those because I think if anything, 9/11 brought us together. And I haven't quite seen that togetherness come together quite since then, but we certainly need to, and hopefully something not as dramatic, hopefully, will bring us together so that we can get through this together, because that's the only way it's going to happen, I think.
Maybe we have some hope that the pandemic, when there's finally a resolution to the health crisis, you know, people talk about a vaccine, but any remedy outside of... masks and social distancing and these other things that clearly work, but are not what we, you know, are hoping the rest of our lives are going to be like. And you know, I think we look through history, you know, at major moments like that. It's not always easy. It's not always quick. It's not always soon after. But I'd like to believe that our country will recognize that we're all in this together with this pandemic, and that maybe once we're past that vaccine remedy stage and people feel a little more unfettered, a little more laissez-faire, a little bit more free. And by that, I mean, you know, that they feel like they can go out and be safe no matter what they do, no matter where they touch, whether it's a restaurant or retail store, not just the economy and business, but their friend's house, sending their kids to things.
Sure.
You know, whatever it is that people do, going to work, you know, hopefully there's a reflective moment, you know, at that point too, looking back at the now, what, hundreds of thousands of deaths across the country.
Yep.
you know, and we don't know where it's going to end. Hopefully there's a moment just like that where, even if it's for a short time before people get back into their silos, I think it'll be really important for our country to use this as an opportunity to, kind of never forget this crisis. And even though it's not the same thing, it's not as dramatic, obviously, is what happened on 9/11, or is shocking. Obviously the devastation to our country, as well as many, many folks on the front lines across the country. We obviously haven't had that issue in Franklin, but we have had people contract the virus, and I'm sure there are other places where there are other public safety professionals who have not been so lucky. So hopefully we get to a point where we all realize that we are one country, and we have that same reflection and that same collective spirit to grow back as one. And, you know me, fairly optimistic. That's just moving forward is the way I am. And I'd like to believe that, when this thing is contained, our country has that kind of reflection and is able to move forward like we did after 9/11. So, I think you don't think about that all that much until you are down there at a memorial like this. And then you start thinking about other things since then. Start thinking about the friction in the country right now. And you start hoping that maybe these moments that we're watching help galvanize all of us to realize we are all in this together, and we're only going to be able to get back to what we knew, that we all want back to. We're only going to get there if we do that.
Agreed. And I think, Chloe, even just being here in mass as a commonwealth, getting that common understanding, that common agreement, that common purpose, and willingness to help each other, because we are in it together. I, if we can get that out of it, I share your optimism. But that would be the other piece that I would add to it. Not just we get back to whatever the new normal is, but we do so better. So we can avoid some of these issues that have cropped up over the years, because frankly, either there wasn't an appetite or they're not the time to talk about some of these things that do need to get resolved. And if we have a discussion, we can reach an agreement. But unfortunately, some of the political atmosphere is such, you can't even have a discussion sometimes. So that doesn't help.
It doesn't, but it'll be over soon, one way or another. The chips always fall where they are for every election. And, then you look at where the dynamic is after that, and you recalibrate. Right. And you adjust and see what that is moving forward. So, we'll have to see. You look at airport security, you look at other issues like that, certainly improved after 9/11. Awareness certainly improved after 9/11 of a whole series of issues, both positive and some of them kind of negative. But I think we'll be in for public health. I haven't had a moment like this in a long time. And I think when we're done with this, there'll be unquestionably a new awareness of the importance of, what things like what my mother always taught me. when I was a kid, wash your hands before you come to dinner, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny, you look back on that now and you kind of get lazy about it, but it was the most convincing remedy to infections of mm-hmm. viruses and bacteria that was going on for hundreds of years. And,
and
almost that simplicity of that, just that one thing is actually quite effective and proportionally speaking, it really eliminates a lot of potential illness. So I think that this is going to bring a great awareness among us when we get our feet back underneath of us as a country, as a state, as a community. People will get better from these things.
Indeed. Indeed. And hopefully with the election, certainly picking up on that point, we just went through the primary, and at least based upon my emails with Teresa and based on a Globe article I saw, it sounds like she's going to be doing a debrief with you at some point if she hasn't already.
Yep. So we haven't really done that. We'll try to do some of that next week with the whole staff. They're already cooking to get in mode to get the mail-in requests out next week.
Right.
I would just say that I want to thank the, obviously, the Secretary of State's office and everybody for kind of coming together with that kerfuffle. You know, obviously, it's a busy, it's a difficult election season for everybody, for everybody who works in that, because, you know, back in June or July, they obviously in the middle of the pandemic, or early in the pandemic, they needed to have a resolution to deal with this, and mail-in balloting was there, and obviously that's like a, you know, a 90-degree turn.
Yep.
People that don't follow, you know, elections, you know, there's a certain rhythm that goes with this whole thing. A lot of the election workers are folks that have worked with us for a long time, you know, and they know their role. They come in, and it's an assembly line, right? It's just,
yep.
It's just old school. It's just, you know, rinse and repeat, just keep going at it.
Yep.
And when you change the dynamics like that, the deadlines change, and these things got to go out, and this has got to be in by this. And
it's a whole different process.
And the rules are a little different for the primary versus the general. To illustrate that point,
yep.
The primary had an 8 o'clock deadline, nothing after it, whether it was in the mailbox or not. But in the general, they're allowing things that were postmarked on that date to continue to be counted for the next few days. So even the rules for both of the elections were a little different.
Right.
The good news is number one, you know, we had over 9,100 ballots cast out of about 25,000 registered voters, which is obviously well above what normally would draw a primary, even in a federal or state election in Franklin.
Yeah,
and number two, you clearly saw the number from the Secretary of State, I believe it was about 1.6 million votes.
Sure.
Which is obviously, you know, well and above a primary. So the good news is there's obviously an engagement. Second, you know, even due to the error in the clerk's office, you know, like I said in the newspaper, I think last week, you know, when they had called me that night, which they did at about midnight, and let me know what was going on, you know, they were back up in the office at 8 o'clock the next morning and alerting the Secretary of State's office to this so that we could try to get corrective action. And and obviously every ballot in Franklin from every voter was counted. It was gone through numerous checks and balances. The Secretary of State's office actually did a fair amount of that on our behalf after Thursday throughout the Labor Day weekend to make sure the numbers had corroborated with one another from however they do it with the voting machines and what was entered in the state database. And so, you know, the good news for every resident in Franklin that did go out to vote, their vote counted, their vote was tallied, and produced the results that the residents of the various elected offices had needed. Obviously, I think, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, but I mean, obviously, you know, there's some, there's a debrief that is required on our end to happen to understand what went wrong, what could we do better. As I said in the paper, it was a great trial run. I think a lot of clerks, and I'm not going to put more words in the mouths of other town clerks, but I, you know, in being in the industry and talking a lot of other town managers, you know, I think a lot of clerks, clerical offices were looking at the primary as a trial run. This is all, yeah. A lot of this is very new.
Oh, sure.
And obviously mail-in voting is new. You know, a couple of years ago, everybody was trying to talk about internet voting, right? And
right.
Here we go back to the, you know, back to, hard
the old
copies.
Paper-based, yes.
Paper-based. And, you know, I think, you know, one of the challenges that we have certainly in my office is roles and responsibilities. And, you know, we obviously, I've never had a day since I've worked in Franklin where we've not had a collaborative relationship in the town clerk's office with all of the staff down there. You know, yet at the same time, there's a certain jurisdictional era here where, you know, the town clerk is an elected job.
Correct.
In Franklin, and I think well before I got here, there was different debate about whether to have an appointed or elected clerk, and the town did change the town charter many years ago to have a appointed treasurer collector with the rationale that when you're managing money of well over $100 million budget, you know, the town should be investing in a professional with you know, really high level criteria and try to get the best person for the job, because that's just really what the taxpayers want is the best value for their money. And so there's a unique relationship in state law between clerks and the Secretary of State, in which, a lot of the other administrative staff in the municipal building are kind of outside that, because again, the town clerks, the Secretary of the Commonwealth runs the elections across the Commonwealth, mm-hmm. and has all 351 of those city or town clerks. They have a unique relationship in terms of how that information, how that guidance, how the industry standards, how the protocols go, and not to the full extent, but obviously that kind of traditionally cuts out the chain of command that normally happens with the local legislative body, the town council and the town administrator and so forth.
Right.
And so, sometimes those things are a little bit of a challenge, but we're going to review all of that hopefully next week. And while most of the support staff are continuing to attend to the assembly line of getting out the cards for people that want to do mail-in ballots, we're going to try to debrief a little bit and see where we need to do better. It's one of those things that in these scenarios, I'd rather have that happen in the primary than the general, for obvious reasons.
Yes.
But, I think there are a lot of little things that we can do to try to make what's likely to be the largest turnout, certainly in Franklin history, if not state history, before this general election, which is coming up in the near 6 weeks.
Yep. Yeah, to reinforce to your points, clearly it was the largest, and I had only utilized the town clerk's numbers back to 2000, but we had 4,800 in the primary in 2012, and that was the highest at that time. This effectively doubled. The state secretary's numbers. Clearly went back to, I think you referenced 1990, so from a statewide perspective, yeah, that's impressive. The other point to reinforce what you said, the process worked, albeit it took time. But it was identified, the process worked. The one piece, knowing a little bit of the reading of the law that I've done now, and I understand a manual count is good and especially required when the machine breaks. This wasn't one of those manual recount type situations. And to the extent that the time could have been more efficiently made use by using all the machines that were there, because the machines were still functioning. But that's going to require a law change, because the law currently says it has to be done manually. So
there's a double-edged. I'm glad you brought that up, actually, Steve. So in talking to the Secretary of Commonwealth staff, they brought up an interesting point, meaning essentially what they do in these scenarios is they have statutory authority to essentially put any community in Massachusetts into it. Forgive me for the verbiage, but just to illustrate it, basically receivership.
Correct.
If they see a significant series of problems, they can basically step in and take over.
Sure.
That's not fully what happened here. What happened here is they try their first attempt to come in and bring in the professional assistance to try to assist the local officials. In this case, particularly, and this is where the elected position matters and differentiates from an appointed position, because
Correct.
An elected position, they go right to them and they use the elected clerk as the de facto individual that they work through.
Right.
If it was appointed, they would still do that, but obviously would do that in a much more heavy partnership with wherever the chain of command goes.
Correct.
But what's interesting is, particularly in this case, because there were several contested or close races, not just the 4th Congressional.
Correct.
But this is also, Representative Kennedy, Congressman Kennedy's district.
Yep.
And in addition to all of the other races that were going on, they could maybe have done the ballots through the machines. But the potential for a recount was real. It was close.
Certainly. Absolutely.
And statistically, actually, if you really analyzed it, it was very unlikely that a recount was going to take place. But you can't make that judgment, and you can't assume that a certain candidate is going to actually win all of those 3,000 votes. And you can't make the assumption that they won't.
Correct.
And so the idea that they were right around just lower than a fraction below 1% was within the margin of error of a potential recount anyways.
Right.
And so by doing it the way we did it,
it avoided the recount for sure.
You basically avoided the recount. And you would have been back a week later counting the same ballots that you had a chance to count that night. And so it was really kind of saving everybody's Labor Day weekend by investing those extra 4 or 5 hours. They were late. I was there till 1:45 in the morning. By doing it that way, you really did preserve, and even as more, maybe even just as importantly, the candidates then knew and the public knew their votes counted. Candidates then knew kind of more statistically where the lines in the sand were. And I think that's why you saw the concession fairly early on Friday from the candidate, Jesse Rommel, the closest. When in fact, if you looked at the numbers, another candidate from Newton, Betsy Grossman, actually did much better than the other, than the second place candidate that was within that 1%. So, you know, once some of the numbers came out that Mr. Oakenclaw had received a fair amount of votes, you know, it seemed inevitable that that was going to be the case. And I remember thinking at about 12:30, I remember thinking, oh, you know, this was the right way to do it. Because now we can, the candidates and everybody can breathe for the weekend and it's done and we don't have to come back. And then there's one more element that would have then just delayed everything more for weeks. And we might be sitting here today, actually.
Still not knowing.
And so, the Secretary of State's office, was quite funny. They walked over to me, they saw the volunteers in there ready to count ballots. And they walked over to me and said, we need 10 more people. I said, I'm on it. So we got, I do want to thank a lot of the municipal staff, as we always do. It's such an amazing team. You know, Carrie Bertoni, Gus Brown, even a bunch of the ladies from the DPW, Donna Capone, they just came right in, you know, and it was a real great team effort up there. And once they got in their rhythm again, you know, the system actually went fairly flawlessly and it went very well and it was very accurate. So, so those are the good, you know, the good sides of all this, you know, and like we do with everything, we'll just go ahead and reevaluate with the staff and see what kind of things we can do better.
Be better prepared for November for sure. Yep. And on this past Wednesday, we had shifting topics into one of our favorite ones, stormwater.
Thanks for putting this high on the list right after election. So
absolutely,
hopefully people listening will stick around.
So the stormwater map with the impervious area is now out there. It's been shared, and some of the findings that I had, which are already on the list of improvements, have already been reinforced by some of the other people on Facebook as they look at their. There was one individual who I know is going to be contacting because they had two dots on their plot. Some mistake somewhere because they really shouldn't have two because it's one plot. So, but those are the kinds of things that we need to find in order to correct the data. So the process is working.
Process is working. I mean, everybody should go to the front page, franklinma.gov, stormwater link right at the bottom. First, the map is unbelievable. It's just incredible to think of how much data you can get these days. I want to point the public to one really important number. You know, don't focus too much on exactly where the line is on the map. There's a geometry to this that might not be exactly to the millimeter. Right. We say this is a clause on all of our GIS maps. But the important thing is to look at the number of impervious surface on your property. So it could be 1492 or 2361 or
2841, 15,972,
right? Yep, make up the number. The important thing you need to do is look at that number. And then you need to take that number and put $18.66 for every 1,000 on that number. That's how you do it. I'm telling you to this to cut to the chase.
Right.
And that's the fee that is the baseline for your particular property's assessment. If you're a residential homeowner, okay, you know, you can calculate this fairly simply. If it's 1,500 on the dot, we round up. If it's 1,499 or below, we round down.
Yep.
There probably will be a movement at some point to prorate this, but we're starting, we're taking bite-sized chunks here under a plan that in a world in which we want instantaneous gratification and certainty for the rest of our lives, this is a 20-year long process, if not longer. So this is going to take time. And that's the, at least the proposal that the ad hoc group of the subcommittee of the town council voted on to move forward to the council. This is still up for debate. It's going to be heavily debated later this fall when we get the full legislation drafted. That's your baseline fee. Then there'll be a series of credits for residential homeowners or businesses that have done a series of work on their property in terms of drainage work, mm-hmm. where you put the water, rain barrels, all the way to commercial and industrial businesses or other nonprofits that have infrastructure for water recharge underneath their property. We use the Big Y as the example all the time because they came in 8 years ago.
Walgreens at Four Corners was another
Walgreens
one too.
At Four Corners, the high school, there's some at the Dean College, there's some buildings like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want everybody to realize a point that came out, and there's a lot of points to make, but you know, right now you're paying for this out of your property taxes. And that is very unequal for most residential homeowners.
Correct.
Because the majority of impervious surface in the community is our businesses like EMC and Franklin Village Mall, who have these acres.
Commercial industrial space.
Acres and acres.
Oh, yeah.
There's also state agencies that have acres of impervious surface in town, like MassDOT.
MassDOT.
So they're not paying any property taxes right now, and they're not contributing any money to the actual problem that is disproportionately causing them to cause the problem. So, you know, it's really important for the residential homeowner. You know, you may go in and go, geez, I got to end up paying $56 a year. I don't want to do that. I don't blame you. But there'll be procedures to evaluate credits. There'll be certainly an abatement process at some point. And there also will be, there is going to be a proposal for folks who meet certain income requirements, kind of like home heating oil assistance, and also the discounts on our water, sewer, trash bills, rec programs, fire bills, ambulance bills. There's going to be a process for somebody to get a full waiver based on certain income qualifying guidelines. And,
correct.
And that was something the council obviously, as you know, Steve, was really pushing for. And, you know, we're going to probably come back, I would imagine, in late October, November, when we're able to really get all the legislation together.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to do multiple bylaw changes on these things. And this will, you know, again, set us up for success and to comply with federal law. For those of you that are hearing about this for maybe the first time, the town of Franklin was the lead plaintiff in suing the EPA. So we've already sued everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We've sued to the top. We actually did win some victories in that. But, you know, unfortunately right now, it's really, really going to be hard to continue to fight the fight. Otherwise, we're just going to get penalized and fined by the federal government. And so, you know, here it is. So I really encourage people to go take a look at that map. Call the Department of Public Works. There's a new stormwater manager there named Derek Adams. Derek's got a great story. He was actually a summer hire as a kid in Franklin.
So he grew up in the system.
He like literally went from raking leaves and mowing lawns, and now he's going to be running our stormwater division. He's a really bright guy, and obviously our GIS analyst, Kate Soberg, and everybody knows Brutus. I mean, all those folks are available at the DPW to answer questions and things like that. So people should really take a look at that. It's going to come down on them, and there'll be a bigger debate at the council level later this fall.
Good points. Yeah, and certainly to reinforce, well, the 1866 is the rate that may change over time, but it's the start. But to reinforce the key point is, it will be much more fairly charged so that the nonprofits as well as the commercial industrial get to pay their piece of that, which is not the case today. It's just the property tax owners that are paying the stuff today. So more to come. And segueing there into, we got a town council meeting Wednesday, but you got a budget subcommittee update before that, also on Wednesday.
Yeah, quick quick preview. I mean, Councilor Kelly, you know, I think everybody in town has been, you know, now the summer's over, is kind of like, what's up with the budget, you know, and whatnot. School's going back, so people are concerned and asking a few questions. And, you know, Councilor Kelly, you know, asked if we could have a quick subcommittee meeting. There'll be one this Wednesday at 5:45, right before the council meeting. And, you know, a couple of the items we'll go over. We'll go over some quick hits of where we stand with the budget. And we're also going to give a little update on the CARES Act FEMA reimbursement, federal money that we've received throughout this and how we've spent it.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten a lot of inquiries recently. I think Councilor Kelly has too, with concerns about not only the school budget,
right,
but all the there's rumors, which I'm not surprised about, you know, well, how much is going to have to come out of the school budget to pay for PPE,
right,
or staff replacements, or permanent substitute teachers, or, you know, all these different aspects of things. And, you know, I thought it was a great time, actually, now that we've kind of hit a plateau, you know, for the last 3.5 months in Franklin, you know, with COVID, that we could more accurately describe what we've been spending the money on. We've actually received a fair amount of federal assistance. It's not all spent yet, but we have it fairly well allocated in terms of what we think we need to protect, you know, obviously the parents and the teachers and the kiddos,
mm-hmm.
As well as the municipal staff. So we'll have a little update on that on Wednesday. I'm going to leave you on the edge so people tune in. I know you'll
Absolutely.
Be there, Steve, but, you know, just, you know, we've received several $1 million, you know, from the federal government. The good news is that's not going to affect our operating budget at all yet. My bigger concern is the action, or hopefully not lack of inaction, down in Congress in the next month or two.
Right.
As much as I am a critic of racking up the federal credit card tab more and more and more, you know, the truth of the matter is that the town of Franklin, as outlined in my budget memo earlier this year, is definitely going to see some very devastating cuts if Congress does not act and do something, at least for fiscal 21, just to stabilize state and local governments, in particular local governments, over these next 9 months as we go through the fiscal year. It's really critical. Superintendent and I wrote a letter, advocacy letter, on this in June. It's up on the town website, and hopefully they're able to do something soon. But we'll see what happens down in Congress.
Yeah, certainly it's going to be needed. Notwithstanding the action, apparently the Senate didn't get to a vote yesterday. Vote didn't make it. So hopefully they will be able to do something, because we do need it. And this is one of the better causes to do so. But more on the local level, I know Governor Baker's extended the restaurant outdoor seating extension. I think that just extends what we already and you've already put in place. You don't have to do anything else at this point now.
Yeah, it probably is just a memo from us out to the licensees to let them know, though I'm sure they're fairly aware. You know, I'm glad that he did that. I mean, obviously a lot of people are concerned about restaurants. We've seen some statistics thrown around that 20% have already gone out of business. You know, I will say in Franklin, you know, I'm sure there will be a casualty here or there. I don't know that for sure. My assumption always was that most restaurants would hang in there for a few months, get to the reopening phase, and hang in there until probably Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and then reevaluate where they are.
Right.
I have not received any paperwork yet in my office, you know, that I'm aware of, at least, that anybody is returning their license due to being closed. Again, I'm
right.
sure that will happen. You know, Franklin's got a fairly large restaurant industry in town. But the longer we can keep those open and play the dice with the weather.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
and the takeout business is less affected by the weather. So that at least
right.
helps them as well.
And it appears there's going to be a Takeout Tuesdays campaign from the downtown business owners, and
mm-hmm.
you know, we'll certainly be helping with that. It's a great idea. It's kind of like Taco Tuesdays, remember?
Yes.
You know, or
yep.
whatever, but No, it's a great idea to take out Tuesdays. Now you can get the cocktails, which you've heard on this show many times. I've been jawing about this for, you know, if you can put another $13 for, you know, two margaritas, $26 or whatever they cost these days.
Right.
And you can put that in the, and you can put that in the hands of those businesses and let them take it home. You know, it makes a difference. It because when people go in there, they're going to write a little gratuity with that.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And,
sure.
And I think that I think every little bit helps so much. And I think as we come up upon January, February, March, where outdoor seating, you know, is likely not going to be possible. Although I will admit, I will do it. I will go out. And
there will be some good days. We know New England weather is strange like that.
Right? I will go out. You know me, I'm a backpacker, a hiker, an outdoorsman. I'm not afraid of 0 degrees. If they're open, I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly to Gallagher's if it's in the alley.
Right.
It's a great thing that they did. It was a no-brainer. I'm sure they've been hearing a lot about it. And, you know, hopefully we can keep this going for a little while longer until the end of the calendar year. And then, this extension really, really might be, depending on weather, really, really might be something that helps the difference between whether a restaurant decides they're going to go out of business and fold or whether they stay open and try to get until March again or April.
Mm-hmm. True. Now, related to there's the streets sidewalks program that the governor's been touting. Clearly, we've already just gone through realigning the streets and the traffic, et cetera. And other than the Teddy Gallagher's, which certainly fits nicely in the alley and utilizes space, has there been any other discussion that you've heard of in terms of trying to do something like that to provide, you know, some, quote, outdoor dining, other than places where obviously we already have places where it's already there. So we already have a good set of that, but not elsewhere.
Yeah, it's funny. We've gotten very few inquiries for that. I mean, I think the issue with the sidewalks has always been in Franklin. We've had this discussion about outdoor seating before. There's just not a lot of room. And the difficulty is really, it's about ADA. It's
right.
You know, if you look at a lot of the sidewalks, you go to Boston, right? The sidewalks are wider.
Yes.
You know, much wider than they are here. And with the alignment, you have a certain exact width of that sidewalk of what ADA compliance is. You stick a couple tables out there and then you accommodate for a little bit of, let's go a little further than we should.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like speed limit signs. Okay. Right. 65, but I'm going to go 75. And if I don't go 75, I'm probably lucky. And so you just wonder, do you end up getting a block, you know? And nobody's asked about, you know, streets. There might be some downtown or in Franklin Crossing that could maybe make that argument, but I haven't really received a lot of inquiries into doing that. And then when you get into the roads, particularly if you think of downtown, you know, you're then taking away parking spaces.
Correct.
And you're looking at like McGurrow House, Hang Tie, even Gallagher's. I mean, some of those spaces, you know, may not be that safe given the traffic that goes through it, but. I haven't really heard of a lot of requests.
No, that's fine. We'll move on to another positive I just saw come across the radar before we started this session. The Beaver Street's now accepting credit card payments. That's an improvement.
So we're working on a couple things here, actually. We're actually doing an analysis right now on, just by the dynamics of online services, which I really truly believe Franklin was very well prepared for. I wish I could claim I was thinking of a pandemic when we did all this, but it ended up working out that way. Beaver Street's going to accept credit card payments. And we're actually looking at very, very narrow set of services where the town will pay the ACH fee for
the transaction.
Property tax. Water, sewer, trash bills, town clerk services, as well as Beaver Street itself. People brought to my attention a fairly good point that when they go to get a recycling sticker, they're charged a credit card fee off of it. And, you know, it didn't really sit well with them. And, you know, I told them I couldn't change it right now, immediately, right. But we would look into it. So and with the online issue with tax payments on UniPay, we will absolutely not be paying credit card payments in terms of real credit cards, but an ACH payment,
you
know, is much smaller. But we do know that for certain basic services, like paying those bills that I just mentioned, including the town clerk's office, in terms of dog licenses and vitals and things of that sort, it doesn't, I don't know, there's something about it doesn't feel right that you have to pay, you know, 85 cents for a dog license for a credit card payment. Some people just do it because that's the way they do things. Yeah. But I think there's an efficiency on the other end where when we take less cash and checks, you know, we're really streamlining the offices quite a bit. And actually this year, in the treasurer's office, Carrie's done a tremendous job. We have not taken cash for 6 months, and people, other than a handful of folks, you know, really have just adapted, and like really well. And but we're still seeing a lot of mail-ins and things like, particularly for dog licenses, where, you know, we'd really like everybody to do that online, because then that takes a huge burden off the staff.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we're looking at a cost-benefit analysis of, is it more affordable and more effective to make most people, if not everybody, pay online?
Right.
And for these basic things, you know, if you're going to be a builder and a contractor, and you're going to go in and get, you know, it's a $5,000 permit for whatever, for swimming pools and the whole unit, well, that's not going to happen, right?
Right.
But I'm talking about things that apply to basically every citizen where you have to do it. And a recycling sticker actually is actually in that category where, you know, if you want to dispose of all those things up there, you have to get a yearly sticker. And a few people called me recently and were like, this is ridiculous. And I said, well, I can't waive it right now, but we're going to look into it. So those are some things that we're trying to do behind the scenes to really try to create the efficiencies there. And at the same time, it creates a safe atmosphere for our employees and the public. So
I think it incents the right behavior that you want, because on the one hand, if you're, and you've credited that, you would have some internal processing savings. Yep. And even at a, call it a 25 cent ACH fee, that's less than the postage, right? So there can be savings on both sides to do it that way. So kudos for that. I look forward to hearing more of that as it comes, and certainly we'll share that here. Because that's what we do. We do kind of the news. And I know a couple of other organizations were out there. So the Franklin Police made it up to the TV with that good program on the mental health, which, if I recall, was what, at least 2 years now in operation?
Yeah, the jail diversion program. The plug I'll make is, number one, everybody listen to this, and they don't even need to listen to this, but I'm sure it's all over the place, needs to see the story. WBZ did a tremendous job, and credit where credit's due. Sergeant Johnson and Deputy Chief Mills are the PIOs, and they never cease to amaze me. And in this, I just, you know, all that we're watching on TV all the time about debating this unnecessarily political issue that is out there in terms of two sides, you know, to see our department doing that and getting a story out like that is just, I hope it gives a lot of confidence to the folks in town of what kind of police department we have here in Franklin. And then maybe what's in Franklin doesn't necessarily reflect what's going on globally.
Yeah.
That said, the jail diversion program has been going on for a couple of years. You know, and this is something I want to point out, because I'll let folks go to the clip, because they really should go to the clip. But, you know, this is state money. This is a state grant.
Right.
Department of Mental Health. And I'm very worried, because I'm worried about everything at the state level.
Because of their budget issues, et cetera.
Their budget issues. These are the easy things. And I worked on Beacon Hill for a long time.
Right.
You know, these are the easy things to kick to the curb.
Right.
And we've seen it too often with anything related to mental health. You know, people, not everybody, but you know, I think we've heard a lot about it. These issues revolving around mental health always seem to be one of the first casualties during budget cuts, whether it's healthcare, whether it's programs like this. It's just, it's frustrating. And it's a societal issue. We just seem to not, we just don't seem to want to admit, or we admit, but, and the stigma's there, but we're getting past that, but we just don't want to pay for rectifying the problem. And here's an amazing example of about $90,000 a year, if I'm not mistaken, that comes through a three-year program, pay for a mental health clinician, to go to some of the sites in town that we know where these troubles are. And it's been incredibly effective. And it's just another example of our police. You know, people want to, you know, talk about Ben Franklin, as does everybody, and he does work. Ben he Franklin does actually de-escalate, you know, certain issues. There's no question about it. Ben is very cute. He's very sweet, but he's also very effective at what he does. And as I always show people when I have a bad day, I even have Ben up on my my screenshot on my phone.
Sure.
Because why not? It really does make you, it does make you really smile. Mm-hmm. Look at that face.
Yeah.
But here's a less, you know, not as cute, you know, way to do things. And I think in the story it highlighted really highlighted an incredibly proactive program on how to de-escalate situations. And as we know, the chief of police, for his tenure, to his credit, TJ Lynch, has posted all uses of force incidents online. He's very transparent with his data. Anyone can go look it up. And anyone can give him a buzz. They have a staff member that deals with all this stuff. And it's just an amazing job. I don't want to spill the beans. I really want people to go look at the clip. I see it's been going around Twitter. It's great to see. And WBZ really did a marvelous job with that story.
Yeah, and I was glad I was able to catch the HTML code as well. So it's up on Franklin Matters. We'll be sharing it through our normal channels as well. So, yeah, it is a good clip. And they do have an article behind it as well.
Yes.
And as along with WBR on the radio side, was doing one of their pieces in terms of how, what's the student impact going back to school? And they happened to find a couple of Franklin students. So we've got the link to that with their audio clip, and kudos to them for their comments. So we've never been getting some good news.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's, it never ceases to amaze me how strong kids are. You know, we're talking about this, you know, being nimble and adapt and whatnot. And it just feels like, you know, obviously most of the commentary goes over to the schools as it should, but, you know, peripherally, you know, of course I hear things here, there, and we've said that once in a while, and, they're just so resilient. You know, they're, you know, what they have in front of them is a challenge. Like any decade, any time and era, right? It's always going to be difficult more for the parents than the kids. But the kids really show their resiliency and their thoughtful, positive attitude. And it reminds me of the graduation, you know, where, you know, a lot of us, rightfully so, are evaluating all these things. And then when you got there, you realize these kids were having like an incredible time that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. And, I would expect nothing less out of most of the kids in town to, as they continue to evolve through the school year, to continue to have that same attitude as reflected on that, that radio interview. So a couple of really good things, right, Steve? It's nice to see good things.
It is. And we're happy to share the good things and happy to talk Franklin. And we'll be back in another 2 weeks, unless you've got anything else really pressing at this point before we wrap up for the weekend.
No, I think we're all good, Steve. I mean, we'll just, you know, hopefully people will tune into the budget subcommittee this week and get an update. We're going to put out some facts, and then we'll move forward.
Indeed. Well, thank you for your time. Have a good rest of the day and a good weekend. It sounds like it's going to be a great weather, so I'm sure you'll be out and about as usual.
Well, I'm going to be out and about, no doubt about it. Not in and about, be out and
Not
about.
In and about, out and about.
All right.
Indeed. All right.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.